I know what you should name her, I said, nudging Augie. You should call her Darth Maul. That's the stupidest name in the world for a dog, Via answered, disgusted. I ignored her. Do you get it, Augie? Darth Maul? Get it because dogs maul? Ha ha ha, Augie said. That's so funny, Darth Maul. We're not calling her that, Via said snottily to the two of us. Hi, Darth Maul, Augie said to the dog, kissing her on her pink nose. We can call her Darth for short. Via looked at Nate. Daddy, we're not calling her that.
I think it's kind of a fun name, Nate answered, shrugging.
Mommy,
Via said angrily, turning to Isabel.
I agree with Via, said Isabel. I don't think we should use the word maul for a dog, especially one that looks like this one.
Then we'll just name her Darth,
Augie insisted.
That's idiotic, said Via.
I think since Mommy's letting us keep the dog, answered Nate, she should be the one who decides what to name her.
Can we call her Daisy, Mommy?
Asked Via.
Can we call her Darth Maul?
Asked Augie. Isabel gave Nate a look.
You really are killing me, Nate.
Nate laughed. And that was how they ended up calling her Darth Daisy. 7:11 a.m.
How did she die? I asked Mom. Was she hit by a car?
No. She stroked my arm. She was old, sweetie. It was her time.
She wasn't that old.
She was sick.
What, so they put her to sleep?
I asked, incensed.
How could they do that?
Sweetie, she was in pain, she answered.
They didn't want her to suffer. Isabel said that she died very peacefully in Nate's arms.
I tried to picture what that would look like, Daisy dying in Nate's arms. I wondered if Augie had been there too.
As if that family hasn't been through enough already,
Mom added. I didn't say anything. I just blinked and looked up at the glow-in-the-dark stars on my ceiling. Some of them were coming unstuck, hanging on by just one or two points. A few had fallen down on me, like little pointy raindrops.
You never fixed the stars, by the way,
I said without thinking. She had no idea what I was talking about.
What?
You said you were going to glue them back on,
I said, pointing to the ceiling.
They keep falling down on me.
She looked up.
Oh, right,
she said, nodding. I think she hadn't expected the conversation about Daisy to be over so quickly, but I didn't want to talk about it anymore. She got up on top of my bed, took one of the lightsabers leaning on my bookcase, and tried to jam one of the larger stars back into place with the end of the lightsaber.
They need to be glued, Lisa,
I said just as the plastic star fell down on her head.
Right,
she answered, picking the star out of her hair. She jumped down off my bed.
Can you not call me Lisa, please?
Okay, Lisa,
I answered. She rolled her eyes and pointed the lightsaber at me like she was going to jab me.
Thanks for waking me up with really bad news, by the way,
I said sarcastically.
Hey, you're the one who asked me about it, she answered, putting the lightsaber back. I was going to wait until this afternoon to tell you.
Why? I'm not a baby, Lisa,
I answered. I mean, sure, I love Daisy, but it's not like she was my dog. It's not like I see her anymore.
I thought you'd be really upset,
she answered.
I am, I said. I'm just not, like, gonna start crying or anything.
Okay,
she answered, nodding and looking at me.
What?
I said impatiently.
Nothing,
she answered.
You're right, you're not a baby.
She looked at the plastic star that was still stuck on her thumb and then, without saying anything else, leaned down and stuck it on my forehead.
You should call Augie this afternoon, by the way.
Why?
I asked.
Why?
She raised her eyebrows.
To tell him how sorry you are about Daisy, to pay your condolences, because he's your best friend.
Oh, right,
I mumbled, nodding.
Oh, right,
she repeated.
Okay, Lisa, I get it, I said.
Grumpity grump grump, she said on her way out. You have 3 minutes, Chris, then you've got to get up. I'll turn on the shower for you.
Close the door behind you,
I called out after her.
Please,
she yelled from the hallway.
Close the door behind you, please,
I groaned. She slammed the door shut. She could be so annoying sometimes. I picked the star off my forehead and looked at it. Mom had put those stars on the ceiling when we first moved in. That was back when she was trying to do everything she could to get me to like our new house in Bridgeport. She had even promised that we would get a dog after we got settled in. But we never got a dog. We got a hamster. But that's hardly a dog. That's not even one quarter of a dog. A hamster is basically just a warm potato with fur. I mean, it moves and it's cute and all, but don't let anyone try to fool you that it's the same as a dog. I called my hamster Luke, but she's no Daisy. Poor Daisy. It was hard to believe she was gone. But I didn't want to think about her now. I started thinking of all the things I had to do this afternoon. Band practice right after school, study for the math test tomorrow, start my book report for Friday, play some Halo, maybe catch up on The Amazing Race tonight. I flicked the plastic star in the air and watched it spin across the room. It landed on the edge of my rug by the door. Lots of stuff to do. It was going to be a long day. But even as I was ticking off all the things I had to do today, I knew calling Augie wasn't going to be one of them. Friendships. I don't remember exactly when Zach and Alex stopped hanging out with me and Augie. Well, I think it was about the time we started kindergarten. Before that, we all used to see each other almost every day. Our moms would usually bring us over to Augie's house since there were a lot of times when he couldn't go out because he was sick. Not a contagious kind of sick or anything, but the kind where he couldn't go outside. But we liked going to his house. His parents had turned their basement into a giant playroom, so basically it was like a toy store down there. Board games, train sets, air hockey and foosball tables, even a mini trampoline in the back. Zach and Alex and Augie and I would literally spend hours running around down there, having all-day lightsaber duels and hot ball races. We would have balloon wars. We would pile cardboard bricks into giant mountains and play avalanche. Our moms called us the Four Musketeers, since we did everything together. And even after all the moms, except Isabel, went back to work, our babysitters got us together every day. They would take us on day trips to the Bronx Zoo or to see the pirate ships at the South Street Seaport. We'd have picnics in the park. We even went all the way down to Coney Island a few times. But once we started kindergarten, Zach and Alex started having playdates with other kids. They went to a different school than I did since they lived on the other side of the park, so we didn't see them as much anymore. Augie and I would see them in the park sometimes, Zach and Alex hanging out with their new buddies, and we tried hanging out with them a couple of times, but their new friends didn't seem to like us. Okay, that's not exactly true. Their new friends didn't like Augie. I know that for a fact because Zach told me this. I remember telling this to my mom, and she explained that some kids might feel uncomfortable around Augie because of the way he looks. That's how she put it. Uncomfortable. That's not how Zach and Alex put it, though. They used the word scared. But I knew that Zach and Alex weren't uncomfortable or scared of Augie, so I didn't understand why they stopped hanging out with us. I mean, I had new friends from my school, too, but I didn't stop hanging out with Augie. Then again, I never hung out with Augie and my new friends together because, well, mixing friends can be a weird thing even under the best circumstances. I guess the truth is, I didn't want anyone to feel uncomfortable or scared either. Augie had his own group of friends too, by the way. These were kids who belonged to an organization for kids with craniofacial differences, which is what Augie has. Every year, all the kids and their families hang out together at Disneyland or some other fun place like that. Augie loved going on these trips. He'd made friends all over the country. But these friends didn't live near us, so he hardly ever got to hang out with them. I did meet one of his friends once, though, a kid named Hudson.
He had a different syndrome than Augie has. His eyes were spaced very far apart, and they kind of bulged out a bit. He and his parents were staying with Augie's family for a couple of days while they were in the city meeting with doctors at Augie's hospital. Hudson was the same age as me and Augie. He was really into Pokemon, I remember. Anyway, I had an okay time playing with him and Augie that day, though Pokemon has never really been my thing. But then we all went out to dinner together, and that's when things got bad for me. I can't believe how much we got stared at. Like, usually when it was just me and Augie, people would look at him and not even notice me. I was used to that. But with Hudson there, for some reason, it was just so much worse. People would look at Augie first, and then they'd look at Hudson, and then they'd automatically look at me like they were wondering what was wrong with me, too. I saw one teenager staring at me like he was trying to figure out what was out of place on my face. It was so annoying. It made me want to scream. I couldn't wait to go home. The next day, since I knew Hudson was still going to be there, I asked Lourdes if I could have a playdate over at Zach's house after school, instead of going to Augie's house. It's not that I didn't like Hudson, because I did, but I wasn't into Pokemon, and I definitely didn't want to get stared at again if we all went out somewhere. I ended up having lots of fun at Zach's house. Alex came over, and the three of us played Foursquare in front of his stoop. It really felt like old times again. Except for the fact that Augie wasn't there with us. But it was nice. No one stared at us. No one felt uncomfortable. No one got scared. Hanging out with Zach and Alex was just easy. That's when I realized why they didn't hang out with us anymore. Being friends with Augie could be hard sometimes. Luckily, Augie never asked me why I didn't come over to his house that day. I was glad about that. I didn't know how to tell him that being friends with him could be hard for me sometimes, too. 8:26 a.m. I don't know why, but it's almost impossible for me to get to school on time. Honestly, I don't know why. Every day, it's the same thing. I sleep through my alarm, Mom or Dad wakes me up, whether I take a shower or not, whether I have a big breakfast or a Pop-Tart, we end up scrambling before we leave. Mom or Dad yelling at me to hurry up and get my coat, hurry up and tie my shoelaces. And even in those rare moments when we do get out the door on time, I'll forget something. So we end up having to turn back anyway. Sometimes it's my homework folder I forget. Sometimes it's my trombone. I don't know why. I really don't. It's just the way it is. Whether I'm sleeping at my mom's house or my dad's house, I'm always running late. Today I took a quick shower, got dressed super fast, popped my Pop-Tart, and managed to get out the door on time. It wasn't until we had driven the 15 minutes it takes to get to school and had pulled into the school parking lot that I realized I had forgotten my science paper, my gym shorts, and my trombone. A new record for forgetting things. "You're kidding, right?" said Mom when I told her. She was looking at me in the rearview mirror. "No!" I said, biting my nails nervously. "Can we go back?" "Chris, you're already running late. In this rain, it'll take 40 minutes by the time we got home and back. No, you go to class and I'll write you a note or something." "I can't show up without my science paper," I argued. "I have science first period." "You should have thought of that before you left the house this morning," she answered. "Now come on, get out or you'll be late on top of everything. Look, even the school buses are leaving." She pointed to where the school buses had started driving out of the parking lot. "Lisa!" I said, panicked. "What, Chris?" she shot back. "What do you want me to do? I can't teleport." "Can't you go home and get them for me?" She passed her fingers through her hair, which had gotten wet from the rain. "How many times have I told you to pack up your stuff the night before so you don't forget anything, huh?" "Lisa!" "Fine," she said. "Just go to class and I'll bring you your stuff. Now go, Chris." "But you have to hurry. Go!" She turned around and gave me that look she gives me sometimes when her eyeballs get super big and she kind of looks like an angry bird. "Get out of the car and go to school already." "Fine," I said. I stomped out of the car.
It had started raining harder, and of course I didn't have an umbrella. She lowered the driver's side window.
Be careful walking to the sidewalk.
Trombone, science paper, gym shorts,
I said to her, counting on my fingers.
Careful where you're walking,
she said, nodding. This is a parking lot, Chris.
Mrs. Castor will deduct 5 points off my grade if I don't hand my paper in by the end of first period,
I answered.
You have to be back before first period ends.
I know, Chris,
she answered quickly.
Now walk to the sidewalk, sweetie.
Trombone, science paper, gym shorts,
I said, walking backward toward the sidewalk.
Watch where you're walking, Chris,
she shrieked just as a bike swerved around to avoid hitting me.
Sorry,
I said to the bicyclist, who had a baby bundled up in the front bike carrier. The guy shook his head and pedaled away.
Chris, you have to watch where you're going,
Mom screamed.
Will you stop yelling?
I yelled. She took a deep breath and rubbed her forehead.
Walk to the sidewalk, please.
This she said through gritted teeth. I turned around, looked both ways in an exaggerated way, and crossed the parking lot to the path leading to the school entrance. By now, the last of the school buses was pulling out of the parking lot.
Happy now?
I said when I reached the sidewalk. I could hear her sighing from 20 feet away.
I'll leave your stuff at the front desk in the main office,
she answered, turning on the ignition and looking behind her as she started slowly backing out of the parking space.
Bye, honey. Have a nice...
Wait!
I ran over to the car while it was still moving. The car screeched to a stop.
Chris! I forgot my backpack,
I said, opening the car door to get the backpack that I had left in the back seat. I could see her shaking her head out of the corner of my eye. I closed the door, looked both ways in a super obvious way again, and sprinted back toward the sidewalk. By now, the rain was coming down really hard. I pulled my hood over my head.
Trombone, science paper, gym shorts,
I shouted, not looking back at her. I started jogging up the sidewalk to the school entrance.
Love you,
I heard her call out.
Bye, Lisa.
I made it inside just before the first bell rang. 9:14 a.m. I kept looking at the clock all through science class. Then, about 10 minutes before the bell, I asked for the bathroom pass. I ran over to the main office as fast as I could and asked Miss Dennis, the nice old lady behind the main desk, for the stuff my mother had dropped off.
Sorry, Christopher,
she said.
Your mother hasn't dropped anything off.
What? I said.
Was she supposed to come at a certain time?
She asked, looking at her watch.
I've been here all morning. I'm sure I haven't missed her.
She must have seen the expression on my face because she waved me to come to the other side of her desk. She pointed to the phone.
Why don't you give her a call, honey?
I called Mom's cell phone and got her voicemail.
Hi, Mom, it's me, and, you're not here, and it's...
I looked at the big clock on the wall.
It's 9:14. I'm totally screwed if you don't show up in the next 10 minutes, so, yeah, thanks a lot, Lisa.
I hung up.
I'm sure she'll be here any minute now, said Miss Dennis. There's a lot of traffic on the highway because of all the construction, and it's really pouring outside now.
Yeah. I nodded and headed back to class. At first, I thought maybe I'd gotten lucky. Mrs. Castor didn't mention anything about the paper for the rest of the class. Then, just as the bell rang, she reminded us to drop off our science papers at her desk on the way out. I waited until everyone else had left and walked over to her at the whiteboard.
Mrs. Castor?
I said.
Yes, Christopher. Yeah, sorry, but I left my science paper at home this morning.
She continued erasing the whiteboard.
My mom's bringing it to school, but she got caught in the rain,
I said.
I don't know why, but when I talk to teachers and get a little nervous, my voice goes up at the end of every sentence.
That's the fourth time this semester you've forgotten an assignment, Christopher,
she said.
I know,
I answered. Then I raised my shoulders and smiled.
But I didn't know you knew.
Ha! She didn't even crack a smile at my attempt at humor.
I just meant I didn't know you were keeping track,
I started to say.
It's 5 points off, Chris,
she said.
Even if I get it to you next period?
I know I sounded whiny at this point.
Rules are rules.
So unfair, I muttered under my breath, shaking my head. The second bell rang, and I ran to my next class before she could respond. 10:05 a.m. Mr. Wren, my music teacher, was just as annoyed at me for forgetting my trombone as Mrs. Castor had been about my science paper. For one thing, I had told Mr. Wren that Katie McGann, the first trombonist, could take my trombone home today to practice her solo for the spring concert on Wednesday night. Katie's trombone was getting repaired, and the only other spare trombone was so banged up you couldn't even push the slide past fourth position. So not only was Mr. Wren angry, but Katie was too, and Katie is the kind of girl you don't want getting mad at you. She's a head taller than everyone else, and she gives really scary, dirty looks to people she's mad at. Anyway, I told Katie that my mom was on her way back to school with my trombone, so she didn't give me the dirty look right away. Mr. Wren gave her the dented trombone to use during class, so she didn't even have to sit out of music. When people forget their instruments, Mr. Wren usually makes them sit quietly off to the side and watch the orchestra rehearse. You're not allowed to read anything or do homework. You just have to sit and listen to the orchestra rehearse. Not exactly the most thrilling experience in the world. I, of course, did have to sit music out today since there was no trombone left for me to play. During break, I ran over to the main office to pick up the stuff Mom should have dropped off by now, but she still hadn't shown up.
I'm sure she just got stuck in traffic, offered Miss Dennis.
I shook my head. No, I think I know what happened, I answered grumpily. It had occurred to me while I was watching the band rehearse.
Isabel.
Duh, of course. Daisy just died. Something else must have happened. Maybe something to do with Augie, and Isabel called Mom, and Mom, like she always does, dropped whatever she was doing to go help the Pullmans. For all I knew, she was probably at the Pullman house right now. I bet she'd been on her way back to school with my trombone, science paper, and gym shorts in the backseat of the car when Isabel called, and bam, Mom completely forgot about me. Duh, of course that's what happened. It wouldn't be the first time either.
You want to call her again?
Said Ms. Dennis sweetly, handing me the phone. I shook my head.
No thanks,
I mumbled. Katie came over to me when I got back to music class.
Where's the trombone?
She said. Her eyebrows were practically touching in the middle of her forehead.
You said your mom was bringing it.
She's stuck in traffic? I said apologetically.
She'll have it when she picks me up from school today, though?
I guess Katie made me as nervous as teachers did.
Can you meet me after school at 5:30?
Why would I want to wait around till 5:30? She answered, making a clucking sound with her tongue. She gave me the same look she gave me when I accidentally emptied my spit valve in her Dixie cup a few weeks ago.
Gee, thanks, Chris. Now I'm going to totally mess up my solo at the spring concert, and it's totally going to be your fault.
It's not my fault, I said. My mother was supposed to bring me my stuff.
You're such a moron, she mumbled.
No, you are, was my brilliant comeback.
Your ears stick out.
She made both her hands into little fists and walked away with her arms straight at her sides.
Ugh,
I answered her, rolling my eyes. And for the rest of the class, she shot me the dirtiest looks you can imagine over her music stand. If looks really could kill, Katie McGann would be a serial murderer. All of this could have been avoided if Mom hadn't abandoned me today. I was so mad at her for that. Boy, was she going to be sorry tonight. I could picture it already, how she would pick me up after school and be all, "I'm so sorry, honey. I had to drive over to the Pullmans because they needed help with blah, blah, blah."
And I would be like, blah, blah, blah. And she would be like, come on, honey, you know they need our help sometimes. Blah, blah, blah.
Space. When Augie turned 5, someone gave him an astronaut helmet as a birthday present. I don't remember who, but Augie started wearing that helmet all the time, everywhere, every day. I know people thought it was because he wanted to cover his face, and maybe part of it was that, but I think it was more because Augie really loved outer space. Stars and planets, black holes, anything to do with the Apollo missions. He started telling everyone he was going to be an astronaut when he grew up. In the beginning, I didn't get why he was so obsessed with the stuff, but then one weekend, our moms took us to the planetarium at the Natural History Museum, and that's when I got sucked into it, too. That was the beginning of what we called our space phase. Augie and I had gone through a lot of phases by then. Zuby plushies, Pop Bob bots, dinosaurs, ninjas, Power Rangers, I'm embarrassed to say. But until then, nothing had been as intense as our space phase. We watched every DVD we could find about the universe, space videos, picture books about the Milky Way, making 3D solar systems, building model rocket ships. We would spend hours playing pretend games about missions to deep space or landing on Pluto. That became our favorite planet to travel to. Pluto was our Tatooine. We were still deep into our space phase when my 6th birthday rolled around, so my parents decided to have my party at the planetarium. Augie and I were so excited. The new space show had just come out, and we hadn't seen it yet. I invited my entire 1st grade class, and Zach and Alex, of course. I even invited Via, but she couldn't come because she had a different birthday party to go to on that same day. But then the morning of my birthday, Isabel called Mom and told her that she and Nate had to take Augie to the hospital. He had woken up with a high fever, and his eyelids were swollen shut. A few days before, he had had a minor surgery to correct a previous surgery to make his lower eyelids less droopy, and now it had become infected. So Augie had to go to the hospital instead of going to my 6th birthday party. I was so bummed. But I got even more bummed when Mom told me that Isabel had asked her if she would be able to drop Via off at the other birthday party before going to my party. Before even checking with me first, Mom had said, "Yes, of course, whatever we can do to help." Even though that meant that she might end up being a little late to my birthday party. "But why can't Nate drop Via off at the other party?" I asked Mom. "Because he's driving Augie to the hospital along with Isabel," Mom answered. "It's not a big deal, Chris. I'll take Via in a taxi and then hop on a train." "But can't someone else take Via? Why does it have to be you?" "Isabel doesn't have time to start calling other moms, Chris. So if we don't take Via, she'll have to just go with them to the hospital. Poor Via is always missing out." "Mommy!" I interrupted. "I don't care about Via. I don't want you to be late to my birthday party." "Chris, what do you want me to say?" Mom answered. "They're our friends. Isabel is my good friend, just like Augie is your good friend. And when good friends need us, we do what we can to help them, right? We can't just be friends when it's convenient. Good friendships are worth a little extra effort." When I didn't say anything, she kissed my hand. "I promise I'll only be a few minutes late," she said. But she wasn't just a few minutes late. She ended up being more than an hour late. "I'm so sorry, honey. The A train was out of service. No taxis anywhere. So sorry." I knew she felt terrible, but I was so angry. I remember even Dad was annoyed. She was so late. She even missed the space show. 3:50 p.m. The rest of the day ended up being pretty much as bad as the beginning of the day. I had to sit out of gym because I didn't have my gym shorts and I didn't have a spare set in my locker. Katie McCann's entire table kept shooting me dirty looks at lunch. I don't even remember my other classes. Then math was the last class of the day.
I knew we were having a big math test tomorrow, which I hadn't studied for over the weekend like I was supposed to, but it wasn't until Ms. Medina started going over the material for tomorrow's test that I realized I was in deep trouble. I didn't understand what the heck we were doing. I mean, seriously, it was like Ms. Medina was suddenly talking in a made-up language that everyone else in class seemed to understand but me. Gada bada quotient, pada bibu divisor. At the end of class, she offered to meet with any kids who needed a little extra help studying right after school. That would be me, thank you. But I had band practice then, so I couldn't go. I raced down to the auditorium right after dismissal. The after-school rock band meets every Monday and Tuesday afternoon. I had only joined a few months ago, at the beginning of the spring semester, but I was really into it. I'd been taking guitar lessons since last summer, and my dad, who's a really good guitar player, had been teaching me all these great guitar licks. So when Santa gave me an electric guitar for Christmas, I figured I was ready to join the after-school rock band. I was a little nervous in the beginning. I knew the three guys who were already in the band were really good musicians. But then I found out there was a fourth grader named John who was also joining the band in the spring semester. So I knew I wouldn't be the only new kid. John played guitar too. He wore John Lennon glasses. The other three guys in the band were Ennio, who plays the drums and is considered to be this prodigy drummer, Harry on lead guitar, and Elijah on bass guitar. Elijah's also the lead singer, and he's kind of the leader of the band. The three of them are all in the sixth grade. They've been in the after-school rock band since they were in the fourth grade, so they're a pretty tight group. I can't say they were thrilled when John and I first joined the band. Not that they weren't nice, but they weren't nice. They didn't treat us like we were equal members of the band. It was pretty obvious that they didn't think we played as well as they did, and to be truthful, we really didn't. But still, we were trying really hard to get better.
"So, Mr. B," Elijah said after we had all jammed on our own for a bit, "we're thinking we want to play Seven Nation Army for the spring concert on Wednesday."
Mr. Bowles was the after-school rock band advisor. He had gray hair that he'd kept in a ponytail and had been a member of a famous folk rock band in the 80s. That my dad, for one, had never heard of. But Mr. Bowles was super nice, and he was always trying to get the other guys to include me and John. This, of course, just got the other guys even more annoyed at us, and it also made them really dislike Mr. Bowles. They made fun of the way he sometimes talked with his eyes closed. They made fun of his ponytail and his taste in music.
"Seven Nation Army?" answered Mr. Bowles, like he was impressed by the song choice. "That's an awesome song, Elijah."
"Is that by Europe, too?" John asked, since we'd all agreed a few weeks ago, after much arguing, to play the final countdown by Europe at the spring concert. Elijah snickered and made a face.
"Dude,"
he answered, not looking at John or me,
"it's the White Stripes."
Elijah had long blonde hair that he was really good at talking through.
"Never heard of them,"
John said cheerfully, which I wished he hadn't said. Truth is, I hadn't heard of them either, but I knew enough to pretend I knew them. At least until I could download the song tonight. John wasn't so great at the social stuff that goes on inside a rock band. Lots of group dynamic stuff to sort out. You have to kind of just nod and go along if you want to fit in. Then again, John wasn't very good at fitting in that way. Elijah laughed and turned around to tune his guitar. John looked at me over his little round glasses and made an is-it-me-or-are-they-crazy face. I shrugged in response. John and I had become our own little group inside this rock band. We hung out together during breaks and made jokes, especially since the other three guys hung out together and made their own jokes. Every Thursday after school, I'd go over to John's house and we'd practice together, or we'd listen to some classic rock songs so we could sound like we knew as much about rock music as the other guys. And then we'd make suggestions about what songs we could play. So far, we had suggested Yellow Submarine and Eye of the Tiger, but Elijah, Harry, and Ennio had nixed them both. That was fine, though, because I was really into the final countdown, which had been Mr. Bowles' suggestion. It's the final countdown.
"I don't know, guys," Mr. Bowles said,
But I'm not sure there's going to be enough time between today and Wednesday to learn a brand new song. Maybe we should stick to the final countdown for now.
He played the opening notes of that song on the keyboard, and John started bopping his head. Then Elijah started playing a great riff on his bass, which turned out to be the opening of Seven Nation Army. As if on cue, Harry and Eneo started playing too. It was pretty obvious that they had practiced the song a lot of times before today. I have to say, they sounded amazing. Somewhere in the second chorus, Mr. Bowles put up his hand for them to stop jamming.
Okay, dudes, he said, nodding. You're sounding absolutely awesome. Killer bass, Elijah. But everyone's got to be able to play the song for the spring concert, right? These two dudes need a chance to learn the song, too.
He pointed at me and John.
But it's just basic chords, said Elijah. Like C and G. B, D. You do know D, right?
He looked at us like we were an alien species.
You seriously can't do that?
I can do that, I answered quickly, forming the chords with my fingers.
I hate the B chord, said John.
It's so easy, said Elijah.
But what about the final countdown? John whined. I've been practicing that for weeks.
He started playing the same opening part that Mr. B had just played, but he honestly didn't sound that good.
Dude, that was awesome,
said Mr. B, high-fiving John. I noticed Elijah smiled at Harry, who looked down like he was trying not to laugh.
Guys, we have to be fair here, said Mr. B to Elijah.
Here's the thing, answered Elijah. We can only play one song at the spring concert, and we want it to be Seven Nation Army. Majority rules.
But it's not what we said we were going to play, yelled John. It's not fair that you guys agreed to play the final countdown, and me and Chris have spent a lot of time learning it.
I have to admit, John had guts talking back to a sixth grader like that.
Sorry, dude,
said Elijah, fiddling with his amp, but he didn't seem sorry.
Okay, let's settle down, guys, said Mr. B with his eyes closed.
Mr. B,
said Eneo, holding up his hand like he was in class.
The thing is, this is going to be our last spring concert before the three of us graduate.
He pointed his drumstick at Harry and Elijah and himself.
Yeah, we're going to middle school next year,
agreed Elijah.
We want to play a song that we feel really good about,
Eneo finished.
The final countdown doesn't represent us musically. But that's not fair, said John. This is an after-school rock band, not just your band. You can't just do that.
Dude, you can play whatever you want next year, Elijah answered.
He looked like he wanted to flick John's glasses off his face.
You can play Puff the Magic Dragon for all I care.
This made the other guys laugh. Mr. Bowles finally opened his eyes.
Okay, guys, enough, he said, holding up his hands. Here's what we're going to do. Let's see how well you two pick up Seven Nation Army today and tomorrow.
He said this while pointing at me and John.
We'll practice it a little today. We'll also tighten up the final countdown. Then tomorrow we'll see which song sounds better. But I'm going to be the one to make the final decision which song we play, okay? Sound good?
John nodded yes eagerly, but Elijah rolled his eyes.
So let's start with the final countdown, said Mr. Bowles.
He clapped his hands twice.
From the beginning. Let's go, guys. The final countdown. From the top. Eneo, wake up. Harry, Elijah, get us going, man. On four. A one, two, three.
We played the song. Even though Elijah and the other guys weren't into it, they totally rocked it. In fact, we sounded pretty amazing together, I thought.
That sounded awesome,
said John when it was over. He held his hand in the air to high-five me, which I did a little reluctantly.
Whatever,
said Elijah, shaking his hair off his face. We spent the rest of the class running through Seven Nation Army, but John kept making mistakes and asking us to start over. It didn't sound good at all.
You guys sound terrific,
said John's mother, who had just come in the band room. She tried to clap while holding her wet umbrella. Mr. B looked at his watch.
Whoa, it's 5:30? Oh, man, dudes, I've got a gig tonight. We have to wrap this up. Let's go. Everything in the locker room.
I started putting my guitar in the case.
Step on it, guys,
said Mr. B, putting the mics away. We all hurried up and put our instruments in the locker room.
See you tomorrow, Mr. B,
said John, who was the first to be ready to leave.
Bye, Elijah. Bye, Neo. Bye, Harry.
He waved at them.
See you tomorrow.
I saw the three of them shoot each other looks, but they nodded goodbye to John.
Bye, Chris,
John said loudly from the door.
Bye,
I mumbled.
I liked the guy, I really did. One-on-one, he was awesome, but he could be so clueless, too. It was like being friends with SpongeBob.
After John and his mother had left, Elijah went up to Mr. Bowles, who was wrapping up the mic cords.
Mr. B, he said ultra-politely, can we please play Seven Nation Army on Wednesday night?
At that moment, Aneo's mom arrived to pick up the three of them.
We'll see you tomorrow, dude,
Mr. Bowles answered distractedly, throwing the last of the equipment into the locker room.
Yeah, you're just gonna choose the final countdown,
said Elijah, and then he walked out the door.
Bye, guys, I said to Harry and Aneo as they followed Elijah out.
Bye, dude, they both said to me.
Mr. B turned the key in the locker room. Then he looked at me, like he was surprised I was still there.
Where's your mom?
I guess she's running late.
Don't you have a cell phone?
I nodded, fished my phone out of my backpack, and turned it on. There were no text or missed calls from Mom.
Just call her, he said after a few minutes. I've got to get out of here, dude.
5:48 p.m. Just as I was about to call, my dad knocked on the band room door. I was totally surprised. He's never picked me up from school on a Monday before.
Dad!
I said. He smiled and walked in.
Sorry I'm late, he said, shaking out his umbrella.
This is Mr. Bowles, I said to him.
Nice to meet you,
said Mr. B quickly, but he'd already started out the door.
Sorry I can't stay in, Chad. You've got a nice kid there.
Then he left.
Don't forget to lock the door behind you, Chris,
he yelled a second later from down the hallway.
I will,
I yelled, loud enough for him to hear me. I turned to Dad.
What are you doing here?
Mom asked me to get you, he answered, picking up my backpack.
Let me guess,
I said sarcastically, putting on my jacket. She went to Augie's house today, right? Dad looked surprised.
No,
he said. Everything is fine, Chris. Pull your hood up. It's raining hard. We started walking out the door.
Then where is she? Why didn't she bring me my stuff?
I said angrily. He put his hand on my shoulder as we kept walking.
I don't want you to worry at all, but Mommy got in a little car accident today.
I stopped walking.
What?
She's totally fine,
he said, squeezing my shoulder.
Nothing to worry about, promise.
He motioned for me to keep walking.
So where is she?
I asked.
She's still in the hospital.
Hospital?
I yelled. Once again, I stopped walking.
Chris, she's fine, I promise,
he answered, pulling me by the elbow.
She broke her leg, though. She has a huge cast.
Seriously?
Yes.
He held the exit door open for me while opening his umbrella.
Pull your hood up, Chris.
I pulled my hood over my head as we hurried across the parking lot. It was really pouring.
Was she hit by a car?
No, she was driving, he answered. Apparently the rain caused some flooding on the parkway and a construction truck hit a ditch.
And Mom swerved to avoid hitting it, but then got sideswiped by the car in the left lane. The woman in the other car was fine, too. Mommy's fine. Her leg will be fine. Everyone is fine, thank God. He stopped at a red hatchback I had never seen before.
Is this new?
I said, confused.
It's a rental,
he answered quickly. Mom's car got totaled.
Come on, get in.
I got into the back seat. By now, my sneakers were soaking wet.
Where's your car?
I went to the hospital straight from the train station,
he answered.
We should sue whoever was driving that construction truck,
I said, putting my seatbelt on.
It was a freak accident,
he muttered. He started driving out of the parking lot.
When did it happen?
I asked.
This morning.
What time this morning?
I don't know, about 9. I had just gotten to work when they called me from the hospital.
Wait, did the person who called you know that you and Mom are getting a divorce?
He looked at me in the rearview mirror.
Chris,
he said,
your mom and I will always be there for one another. You know that.
Right,
I said, shrugging. I looked out the window. It was that time of day when the sun's gone down but the streetlights haven't come on yet. The streets were black and shiny because of the rain. You could see the reflections of all the red and white lights of the cars in the puddles along the highway. I pictured Mom driving in the rain this morning. Did it happen right after she dropped me off, or when she was driving back to school with my stuff?
Why did you think she was on her way to Augie's house?
Dad asked.
I don't know,
I answered, still looking out the window. Because Daisy died. I thought maybe...
Daisy died?
He said.
Oh no, I didn't know that. When did that happen?
They put her to sleep last night.
Had she been sick?
Dad, I don't know any details.
Okay, don't bite my head off.
It's just... I wish you had told me about the accident earlier in the day. Someone should have told me.
Dad looked at me in the rearview mirror again.
There was no need to alarm you, Chris. Everything was under control. There was nothing you could have done anyway.
I was waiting for Mom to come back with my stuff all morning,
I said, crossing my arms.
It was a crazy day for all of us, Chris, he answered. I spent the day dealing with accident reports and insurance forms, rental cars, going back and forth to the hospital.
I could have gone to the hospital with you,
I said.
Well, you're in luck, he said, drumming the steering wheel, because that's where we're going right now.
Wait, we're going to the hospital?
I said.
Mom just got discharged, so we're picking her up.
He looked at me in the mirror again, but I looked away.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
We drove quietly for a few seconds. The rain was coming down in sheets. Dad made the windshield wipers go faster. I leaned my head against the window.
This day sucked,
I said quietly. I blew some hot air on the window and drew a sad face with my finger.
You okay, Chris?
Yes,
I mumbled.
I hate hospitals, that's all.
The hospital visit. The first and only time I'd ever been to a hospital before was to visit Augie. This was when we were about 6 years old. Augie had had like a million surgeries before then, but this was the first time my mom thought I was old enough to go and visit him. The surgery had been to remove the buttonhole on his neck. This is what he used to call his trach tube, a little plastic thingy that was literally inserted into his neck below his Adam's apple. The buttonhole is what doctors put inside Augie when he was born to allow him to breathe. The doctors were removing it now because they were pretty sure Augie could breathe on his own. Augie was really excited about this surgery. He hated his buttonhole, and when I say he hated it, I mean he hated it. He hated it. It was so noticeable, since he wasn't allowed to cover it up. He hated that he couldn't go swimming in a pool because of it. Most of all, he hated how sometimes it would get blocked up for no reason, and he would start to cough like he was choking, like he couldn't breathe. Then Isabel or Nate would have to jab a tube into the hole to suction it so that he could breathe again. I watched this happen a couple of times, and it was pretty scary. I remember I was really happy about visiting Augie after his surgery.
The hospital was downtown, and Mom surprised me by stopping off at FAO Schwartz so I could pick out a nice big present to bring to Augie, a Star Wars Lego set, and a small present for me, an Ewok plushie. After we bought the toys, Mom and I got lunch at my favorite restaurant, which makes the best foot-long hot dogs and iced hot chocolate milkshakes on the planet. And then, after lunch, we went to the hospital. "Chris, there are going to be other kids who are having facial surgeries," Mom told me quietly as we walked through the hospital doors. "Like Augie's friend Hudson, okay? Remember not to stare." "I would never stare," I answered. "I hate when kids stare at Augie, Mommy." As we walked down the hall to Augie's room, I remember seeing lots of balloons everywhere, and posters of Disney princesses and superheroes taped to the hallway walls. I thought it was cool. It felt like a giant birthday party. I peeked into some of the hospital rooms as we passed, and that's when I realized what my mom meant. These were kids like Augie. Not that they looked like him, though a couple of them did, but they had other facial differences. Some of them had bandages on their faces. One girl I saw quickly had a huge lump on her cheek that was the size of a lemon. I squeezed my mom's hand and remembered not to stare, so I looked down at my feet as we walked and held on tight to my Ewok plushie. When we reached Augie's room, I was glad to see that Isabel and Via were already there. They both came over to the door when they saw us and kissed us hello happily. They walked us over to Augie, who was in the bed by the window. As we passed the bed closest to the door, I got the impression that Isabel was trying to block me from looking at the kid lying in that bed. So I took a quick peek behind me after we had passed. The boy in the bed, who was probably only about 4, was looking at me. Under his nose, where the top of his mouth was supposed to be, was an enormous red hole, and inside the hole was what looked like a piece of raw meat. There seemed to be teeth stuck into the meat and pieces of jagged skin hanging over the hole. I looked away as quickly as I could. Augie was asleep. He looked so tiny in the big hospital bed. His neck was wrapped up in white gauze, and there was blood on the gauze. He had some tubes sticking out of his arm and one sticking into his nose. His mouth was wide open, and his tongue was kind of hanging out of his mouth onto his chin. It looked a little yellow and was all dried up. I've seen Augie asleep before, but I'd never seen him sleep like that before. I heard my mom and Isabel talking about the surgery in their quiet voices, which they used when they didn't want me or Augie to hear what they were saying. Something about complications and how it had been touch and go for a while. My mom hugged Isabel, and I stopped listening. I stared at Augie, wishing he would close his mouth in his sleep. Via came over and stood next to me. She was about 10 years old then. "It was nice of you to come visit Augie," she said. I nodded. "Is he going to die?" I whispered.
"No,"
she whispered back.
"Why is he bleeding?"
I asked.
"It's where they operated on him,"
she answered.
"It'll heal."
I nodded.
"Why is his mouth open?"
"He can't help it."
"What's wrong with the little boy in the other bed?"
"He's from Bangladesh. He has a cleft lip and palate. His parents sent him here to have surgery. He doesn't speak any English." I thought of the big empty red hole in the boy's face, the jagged flap of skin.
"Are you okay, Chris?"
Via asked gently, nudging me.
"Lisa? Lisa? I don't think Chris is looking so good."
That's when the foot-long hot dog and iced hot chocolate milkshake kind of just exploded out of me. I threw up all over myself, the giant Lego box I'd gotten for Augie, and most of the floor in front of his bed.
"Oh my goodness!"
cried Mom as she looked around for paper towels.
"Oh, sweetie!"
Isabel found a towel and started cleaning me with it. My mom, meanwhile, started frantically wiping the floor with a newspaper.
"No, Lisa, don't worry about that," said Isabel. "Via, sweetie, go find a nurse and tell her we need a cleanup here."
She said this as she was picking hot dog chunks off my chin. Via, who looked like she might throw up herself, turned around calmly and headed out the door. Within a few minutes, some nurses had come into the room with mops and buckets.
"Can we go home, Mommy?"
I remember saying, the vomit taste still fresh in my mouth.
"Yes, honey,"
said Mom, taking over for Isabel and cleaning me off.
"I'm so sorry, Lisa,"
said Isabel, wetting another towel at the sink. She dabbed my face with it. By now I was sweating profusely. I turned to leave even before Mom and Isabel had finished cleaning me off, but then I accidentally caught a glimpse of the little boy in the bed who was still looking at me. I started to cry when I looked into the big empty red hole above his mouth. At that point, Mom kind of hugged me and glided me out the door at the same time. When we got outside the room, she half carried me to the lobby by the elevators. My face was buried in her coat, and I was crying hysterically. Isabel and Via followed us out.
"I'm so sorry,"
Isabel said to us.
"I'm so sorry,"
said Mom. They were both kind of mumbling sorries to each other at the same time.
"Please tell Augie we're sorry we couldn't stay."
"Of course,"
said Isabel. She knelt down in front of me and started wiping my tears.
"Are you okay, honey? I'm so sorry. I know it's a lot to process."
I shook my head.
"It's not Augie,"
I tried to say. Her eyes got very wet suddenly.
"I know,"
she whispered. Then she put both her hands on my face like she was cradling it.
"Augie's lucky to have a friend like you."
The elevator came. Isabel hugged me and Mom, and then we got inside the elevator. I saw Via waving at me as the elevator doors closed. Even though I was only 6 at the time, I remember thinking I felt sorry for her that she couldn't leave with us. As soon as we were outside, Mom sat me down on a bench and hugged me for a long time. She didn't say anything. She just kissed the top of my head over and over again. When I finally calmed down, I handed her the Ewok.
"Can you go back and give it to him?"
I said.
"Oh, honey,"
she answered.
"That's so sweet of you. But Isabel can clean the Lego set. It'll be good as new for Augie, don't worry."
"No, for the other kid,"
I answered. She looked at me a second, like she didn't know what to say.
"Via said he doesn't speak any English,"
I said.
"It must be really scary for him being in the hospital."
She nodded slowly.
"Yeah,"
she whispered.
"It must be."
She closed her eyes and hugged me again, and then she took me over to the security desk, where I waited until she went back up the elevator, and, after about 5 minutes, came back down again.
"Did he like it?"
I asked.
"Honey boy,"
she said softly, brushing the hair out of my eyes,
"you made his day."
7:04 p.m. When we got to Mom's hospital room, we found her sitting up in a wheelchair watching TV. She had a huge cast that started from her thigh and went all the way down to her ankle.
"There's my guy,"
she said happily as soon as she saw me. She held her arms out to me and I went over and hugged her. I was relieved to see that Daddy had told the truth. Except for the cast and a couple of scratches on her face, Mom looked totally fine. She was dressed and ready to go.
"How are you feeling, Lisa?"
said Dad, leaning over and kissing her cheek.
"Much better,"
she answered, clicking off the TV set. She smiled at us.
"Totally ready to go home."
"We got you these,"
I said, giving her the vase of flowers we had bought downstairs in the gift store.
"Thank you, sweetie,"
she answered, kissing me.
"They're so pretty."
I looked down at her cast.
"Does it hurt?"
I asked her.
"Not too much,"
she answered quickly.
"Mommy's very brave," said Dad.
"What I am is very lucky,"
Mom said, knocking the side of her head.
"We're all very lucky," added Dad quietly.
He reached over and squeezed Mom's hand. For a few seconds, no one said anything.
"So, do you need to sign any discharge papers or anything?" asked Dad.
"All done," she answered. "I'm ready to go home."
Dad got behind the wheelchair.
"Wait, can I push her?"
I said to Dad.